dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Know what it is you love doing in the whole of your life. Pursue it with gusto and always assume that no matter what it is, you can build a bridge from it to your work domain. The question to ask yourself starts with, how can I?
And we need to invent a new and radical form of collaboration. It's not about us versus them, or even us on behalf of them. It has to be us with them.
One of the great things about DS106 in my experience is having people take what I've made and make new things from it. It's like the ultimate validation, and it's also like having a conversation.
Encourage experimental doodling. If you put fences around people, you get sheep. Give people the room they need.
Welcome to the DS106 Good Spell, digging into the online course Digital Storytelling 106 from the angle of Mariana Funes's string of 106 Pearls of Wisdom. In each episode, we'll cover one of the bullet points posted by Mariana at 1:06 a.m. on the 106th post of our DS106 Tumblr. This is episode 4.5, which I think is the 6th episode. It's getting confusing. My name is John Johnson. I'm sitting in Glasgow, Scotland, and I am joined, of course, by Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Hi, good evening, John.
We seem to be back on track with a short mistake on my part, pointing at the wrong server. But we'll have slightly sort of sidetracked from the 106 bullets tonight because we want to hear a wee bit about your experiences at OER 14,
which I love the idea of episode 4.5. We are really confusing everybody. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have to listen if they want to know exactly what episode it is.
Yeah, and this is, of course, the 6th episode.
I think. That's right.
So episode 5 will become the 7th.
Exactly. Of course, it's very clear to you and me.
Yeah. Maybe we could start by clearing things up. And OER 14 was what exactly?
What does it stand for, you're asking? Open Educational Resources 14. It's a conference. It's a conference that I think it's in its 5th year, which this year ran in Newcastle. And Rochelle Lockridge, Levine, and me were presenting at the conference about the bit of the S106 that has gone into 3M and the sort of work that we've been doing there.
I'm really interested in this one because last week on my other podcast, EduTalk, we were talking to Lorna Campbell, who was presenting as well at OpenER 14, I believe, and she was talking about just open education resources in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think DS106 is one of the things that's brought the idea of open fully to my attention and maybe shown me a really exciting example of how educating in the open can work. But the presentation you were involved in was this idea, I think, of taking the open course and taking it into maybe a slightly less open environment.
Yes, Rochelle wanted to, she's been involved in the S106 Open for a long time now, and she felt that there was a point in trying to take that some of what the S106 teaches into her organization. And she rather than ask permission, she just got on with it and did it and adapted the S106 Open in order to have it run at 3M. And Alan, her, and I have been, you know, having lots of conversations around, you know, the how you do it, what might we do it, what are we learning from doing it in the open, you know, from doing it, from taking it from the open to what we are calling the open organizational web, and that was really the point of the paper, the idea that it is possible, if you separate out the different elements of open, the idea of, you know, open technology, open community, and open pedagogy, that actually there is nothing that stops you from being able to develop open community and open learning, as it were, in an organization. The thing that often stops us is that we cannot have open technology. And so what Rochelle did was say, well, we can use the technology, the internal technology, and let's see how we can adapt the S106 so that it helps build community internally, and it helps people learn creatively and develop their ability to do digital storytelling for internal communication. And
3M is a massive, massive company in the States, I guess, and maybe wider. I don't know what other companies organise. And I kind of understand they already had sort of internal communication channels.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they have their version of Twitter. They have their version, so they're doing blogs in their platforms. They have the same, well, pretty much the same setup. But I guess not many people were kind of, you know, taking advantage of it, possibly for the learning purposes. And Rochelle, you know, set herself up in a kind of, she called it the patroness role, the kind of as a sort of network connector, really, to try and build community between the open participants, the open DS106, and the internal one. I know she did a hell of a lot of work internally to, you know, get the technology working, their technology, and also adapting all of our kind of weekly assignments for the S106 so that they would fit with the with them and what they needed. It's really interesting how I guess they would say that the pilot that they ran was really successful, and they are now extending it. And a lot of what we were talking about at the conference was really what we did was we role played a business meeting at 3M, and so if you've seen some of the photos and so on, and some of the commentary on Twitter, we just role played that as a way of doing an interactive presentation rather than a talking at people presentation.
Right, and can you maybe tell me a wee bit more about this, what was the say elevator pitch of what you were telling or communicating to the audience, and then what sort of conversations you got back and forward from them?
Well, what's several things, I suppose, that are, you know, so the elevator pitch, I think I've given to you, which is really the paper was under the heading of the case study, and it was a case study that essentially was experimenting with the idea of bringing a program, a course like the S106 that is, you know, played out completely in the open web, and trying to bring that away from the open web and away from an academic environment and into a corporation. And can you do that? How do you do that? What are the obstacles that you find when you do that? So, for example, one of the things that Rochelle is finding now that they are on the second iteration, she decided that the pace of it at the beginning was too much. Mm. And we talked about it, and we thought it would make sense to maybe slow it down. And I think that this second iteration is going on a one topic a month, which I remember saying to Rochelle, oh, I think that's great, we can do that, and then they'll have plenty of time to learn in depth, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out that one of the unintended consequences of more time is that people are more fearful about setting up blogs internally and doing a lot of the kind of communicating, whereas when they only had a few days to do it, they just had to sort of jump in and do it. Yeah. So all of those things, that this is just an example. anecdotal at this point, but it is interesting to reflect on.
Yeah, I think maybe there's something to just getting people caught up in a bit of excitement and pushing the pace a wee bit. But I know certainly if you're working full time, quite a lot of online courses and things are quite difficult to keep up with because of the amount of activity.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often you've got to decide, I'm going to do this bit, but you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to read everything everybody does, just to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And the original course was deemed successful because people came out of the end of it happy with what they had learned, I guess.
That is at an I think this is one of the things that I think needs we will probably be exploring a bit more. Yes, the people who did it and there is a video online on Rochelle's channel and various other places, with quotes and commentary from all the participants from the first one, and the comments are wonderful. You know, they really are about people effectively grasping the point and grasping the idea of, digital storytelling and how it can help them build community, how it can help them communicate and be more creative and innovate. The messages were all very positive, but it is a small group. And then there is a question as to, there is a distinction, in my mind at least, between what helps the individual and what helps the organization and how it helps the organization and the individual. And at this point, I think the number of people who have done it is too small to be able to generalize to the wider organization. But a lot of the conversation that we had at the session was around organizational change. It was around, actually, could you be thinking about using something like VS106 as a vehicle for changing organizations? And some people, which I thought was fascinating, raised the issue of actually, could you, because from my bias, I'm thinking about corporations because I tend to do, a lot of work in businesses. But the people at the conference were saying, could we then look at academic institutions as an organization, as a, the same as a corporation, and could I then be saying that you could use something like VS106 in order to generate change in people's attitudes towards, say, OER generally? And I thought that was a fascinating conversation, because it was really saying, at one level we often think about, academics, universities as places where you're working with, how do you bring in open education, but sometimes changing the frame to, this is just another organization, how can we do this thing? If you're doing it at 3M, could we do the same thing in University X, in School Y? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I would have thought that with just running DS106 or part of a DS106 course in a university would at least raise the idea and awareness of open education, because by its nature everything in DS106 is pretty much in the open, in the open web. So I would have thought it would have been a great fit, and I would have thought with a wee bit of massage maybe of the assignments, and not necessarily then talking about storytelling so much, but looking at openness or the open web and framing it around that, it could maybe be a good resource for teaching people about openness.
Well, Rochelle, I think, definitely thought about framing it from both the perspective of collaboration and then innovation. And of course, that is, both of those things are things that are very dear. And Jonathan Worth, when we were at the conference, was also suggesting and talking about the idea of, instead of using open, why don't we talk about connected learning? Because actually organizations tend to feel more positive about that than they do about openness. Yeah. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Personally, I'm kind of fascinated by the open idea and how it links in with the other sort of work covering out the University of Mary Washington around your own domain stuff, and how much we maybe lose by putting things in unopen places. and I've talked about this a few times in various places. The Google Plus community has got a great amount of energy, and it's a nice bit of software to use, but it's not open.
Well,
you know, you can't get stuff out.
Yes, I think it's interesting, isn't it? This sort of not the, the levels of open and the degrees of openness, because I'm going to say something positive about Google Plus, of course. But I closed my Facebook account a while ago for reasons which, you know, we don't need to go into now. But at the very least, you know, Google, in the Google communities, people can go in and can you know, see what's there and so on. Facebook is really interesting because once you close your account, you are no longer able to go in and access any group. And I thought, well, you cannot even see what's there, which I thought was, you know, it's an interesting thing about the kind of what we lose with closed, and actually what people mean when they talk about open. People would say that, you know, Facebook is open. Well, it is, only if you are a member of it. And is that open? It's you know, the usual conversation that we have around, you know, open behind the firewall, not behind the firewall, behind registering, not registering. And, you know, I agree with you. I think, you know, there is a lot that is lost by not having that sense of, you know, open access. And also hand in hand with that is this thing of, you know, people fear open.
Yeah, but I think paradoxically, when you put your, and there's a kind of link up between this idea of open, owning your own things and being open. If you actually own your own space on the web, you've got a lot more access to it. You don't lose access to it.
I think that is from the perspective of the user, from the perspective of the individual. I think that is one way to work with it. But that still doesn't really address, you know, what do organizations, academic or not, do in order to support, you know, learning and development internally. And my sense is that, you know, the kind of putting, not allowing for things to be open for all sorts of reasons, is actually being a big obstacle to people learning to collaborate. One of the things we talked about at the conference was there is a Microsoft guy, I think he is. Copling, I think his name is, and he talks about reimagining work, and he talks about open default settings, and how when we have open default settings, we can be more creative, we can be more innovative. When you actually, in fact, look at organizations, most organizations, they have a closed default setting, and how that, in fact, you know, impacts our ability to to share and to be creative, in that context. And I think that that's a really fascinating idea, because it's absolutely true. In all the organizations I work in, you see that, and you see how the default is, you know, I'm gonna hang on to everything and I'm not gonna open it up. And you see it with the LMS, you see it with all of that. The idea of the domains of one's own, it's quite radical in that sense, you know, the fact that it's being done. How many people who are non-educational technologists are going to be willing to take something like that up remains to be seen, I guess.
I'm seeing that this tension in the stuff I'm working with at the moment, from people outside Scotland. I'm working on a project for the Scottish Government called GLOW, which is a national intranet for education, which hanging off it has got blogs and wikis and things like that, some of which can be public and some of which can be private. But because we're working with children from ages of, well, in theory, ages of 3 to young people 18 and older, there's a great tension between allowing people to find things and know about other people and child protection. So it's maybe not exactly the same tension as business, where I presume the driver is the driver is profit, but
it's protecting intellectual capital, hence profit. Yes.
So in the education world, you're not necessarily protecting profit, although some organisations are obviously. But what you're trying to do is protect individuals and and their data, and some of these individuals being young. Are very young, you've got a different duty of care towards them than you maybe have with older people, so that's quite an interesting tension to play out, because again, when I was a teacher, I was very keen on my pupils publishing openly on the web because of the goodness they got from that, but you always had to be aware about potential worries and threats, and or even just been perceived as doing something that was not safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that's the thing about, you know, the how do you teach the coping mechanisms, because things will happen that you love and things will happen that you don't. And with children, of course, you know, that can be it's, well, as you say, you have a different duty of care.
I also think again that it's a good idea to let them be exposed to what you're trying to teach them about, in the same way as you let children out into a playground at school. There may be incidents that are unpleasant, and if there are, well, one, you've prepared beforehand and try to mitigate, but afterwards you try and deal with it, but you don't then say, oh, we're not going to go out into the playground again because something bad happened there yesterday. You're going to say,
"Oh, that's a wonderful analogy." It's absolutely true, isn't it? It's the difference between dealing with what happens, knowing that things sometimes do not go as expected and undesirable things happen, but not necessarily therefore taking that step that says, "I'm going to protect, you know, to protect everybody from everything." Lovely example.
So at OER, was there anything else that did you get to go to many of the other talks and things? Or
I can't say that I did a lot of that. I did. What was lovely was meeting a lot of the DS106 people that were there. Mm-hmm. So I went. What I decided early on that what I would do would be that I was there for the people, and hence I would only go to I would choose the sessions that, you know, of people I knew and who I wanted to in some way support, or I wanted to meet, or I wanted to just be there for them. So I went to David and David Carnahan's and Jim Groom's session, where, you know, you should invite him to talk to on Edu Talk about the technological gadgets that he brought to that presentation, because of course Jim wasn't there, so they engineered a having Jim present on something called a paleophone.
A paleophone?
I tell you, you think that we were good with Jiffachrome? Well, a paleophone is where it's at now.
All right.
It's only in beta, so, you know, we couldn't, we were able to talk to Jim Groom at different times in the past to talk about his experiences on the open web and so on. But I'm afraid, you know, the future part of it was not quite developed yet. So we just got to talk to Jim, you know, past and present.
Brilliant.
It was very good. Yeah. It was an excellent presentation. I also did Jonathan Worth's a workshop, which I've been involved with Fauna, as you know, for a little while, and know Jonathan a little bit now, and it was just wonderful, lovely to hear him. I've heard bits of his story about, you know, how he went from, you know, being what I might call an old-fashioned photographer to the photographer that he is now, working in the open. It was really lovely to hear. You know, he's a great storyteller, so it was great to hear him tell tell the whole story of, you know, how it all happened and so on. It's very interesting. What else? And then I met Is Hill, because he was visiting from New Zealand. Oh, so that's more about people. That was lovely, because, you know, we've heard him on the radio and so on, but never met him. So that was really lovely to spend a bit of time. But Alan was there, Rochelle was there in the flesh, so we were able to, you know, hang out together and spend a bit of time. There's something really, really interesting about, you know, meeting for the first time face to face people who, because the work that Alan, Rochelle and I did on this 3M paper, we did mostly completely really online. So when it all comes together, it's in the real world, as it were, it was interesting. It was lovely, a really good experience, even if it took us 10 hours to get to Newcastle and back, and then I had to suffer Alan Levine's humor, let's say, about how we think we have a huge country, and how, you know, Arizona is where it's, you know, it's a huge, I think that England fits into Arizona, but, you know, yet we moan about having to drive for 10 hours. Oh, it was funny, because you know how we are. We always think, you know, about it being really far, and then when you compare it to the USA, you know, they drive 5 hours, you know, 6 hours for breakfast, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. No,
and we are moaning about having to drive 5-6 hours, you know, going all the way across the country. it was a long, long drive, but it was well worth it. You know, I had a great time, and the presentation was a great success. And I do think, you know, it kind of helps to have that sense of DS106, going outside the context of, you know, what we do online, and just going to conferences like this and talk about what I might call the serious side of it, so that, you know, you can have a kind of light, engaging format in the kind of way that we did, and yet, you know, talk about serious issues really that we are confronted with daily when we talk about encouraging open education in our contexts.
Sure, that sounds brilliant, and I really like the idea that you go to conferences for the people rather than anything else, because I can't think of a conference I've ever been to that when I come away, that the best thing about it was that was a presenter or a presentation. It's nearly always the best thing about it is the conversations I've had with people, and that's where you generally, I think, learn more.
I should say before we finish, to just do a shout out, as we say, to the, you know, to Megan and Simon, who organized the organizers. They did a brilliant job, and I've been to many conferences in my life, and this was really so relaxed, and, you know, you really felt like you could just find your own way, and they thought about lots of options for everybody, so that, you know, people could make, you know, choices that suited them and their learning styles. It was really, really great job.
Brilliant. And hopefully you'll send me a wee list of links which I can put up with the audios will be going as usual on edutalk.cc in a couple of days from this one, and hopefully this week I'll be publishing this episode 4.5 and episode 5, which we had pre-recorded so that I could play it last week when you were at the conference, but of course the week before I'd forgotten to play the pre-record for Easter, and so I played that one last week, and this will be a wee bit of catch up, and hopefully we'll kind of be live after that for a wee while, except I think towards the end of May I'll be away on holiday for a week. Okay, so I'll just queue up episode 5 now.
That's where we talk about boring gifs,
is it?
Yeah. I think so.
Jupe. Yes, it's the yeah. Jupe. Yeah. Okay. So thanks very much again for talking to me, Arianna. It's always delightful, and it sounds like a great conference. I wish I could have engineered a visit to it to meet you guys, especially, but to hear more about open education, which seems certainly in my neck of the wood becoming more and more important. Okay, so up next is 106 Bullets, episode 5.